Okay, as we continue on in Psalms chapter 16, we'll be starting off in verse 5. Perchance we shall read the entire 11 verses again, just to get an idea of what the context is. All right, in Psalms chapter 16, I've got 9 slides on this one. I think that we've given our record of Sunday, where I managed to zip right through 2 of them. I think we'll be doing all right here without having to go into Psalms 22, which is the next one. Randy Childs, would you like to read Psalms? Just read verses 1 through 11, please. Yes.
Psalm 16. Preserve me, O God, for I take refuge in you. I said to the Lord, you are my Lord. I have no good besides you. As for the saints who are in the earth, we are the majestic ones in whom is all my delight. The sorrows of those who have bartered for another god will be multiplied. I shall not pour out their drink offerings in blood, nor will I take their names upon my lips. The Lord is the portion of my inheritance and my cup. You support my lot. The lions have fallen to me in pleasant places. Indeed, my heritage is beautiful to me. I will bless the Lord who has counseled me. Indeed, my mind instructs me in the night. I have set the Lord continually before me. Because he is at my right hand, I will not be shaken. Therefore, my heart is glad and my glory rejoices. My flesh also will dwell securely. For you will not abandon my soul to Sheol, nor will you allow your Holy One to undergo decay. You will make known to me the path of life. In your presence is fullness of joy. In your right hand there are pleasures forever.
All right, so as Mickey has mentioned, there are a number of verses here that are not necessarily familiar to us right away, but several that indeed are. As we've gone through this, we've considered that there are some that consider that this is just a psalm of David or about David. Others say it's just a psalm about the Messiah, and others will say that it's about both. And I think that we can look at this and see that indeed it does appear to be something that David can be saying about himself, in addition to talking about the Messiah, pretty much through the whole thing. I was reading the commentary and the Truth Commentary series on this, and it is obvious that the authors there take the view, at least it appears like they didn't state so, that this is only talking about the Messiah. Now, of course, Mickey stated in one of the slides previous to this that this particular verse is the one that assures him that this indeed is talking about David also. So I looked at that and I could see the connection, but there is definitely a lot of messianic prophecy going on here. So we've gotten down to verse 5. So let me know if that slide back there changes. It didn't?
Oh, here?
Yeah.
Match that.
It's not supposed to match that one. Yeah.
Need a button pusher.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's the button.
Yeah.
We'll get it. One of these days. Yeah. Okay. In the quotations that we have for the quotations from the psalm itself, and actually all the others that I'm using, I've changed to the English Standard Version just to make things a little clearer for what we're talking about here. Still trying to figure out why this one didn't work. No. All right. So, in verse 5, American Standard Version says, Jehovah is the portion of mine inheritance and of my cup. Thou maintainest my lot. And in the English Standard Version, we see the Lord is my chosen portion and my cup. You hold my lot. I checked a number of different translations, And they all talked about my lot. And what do we suppose that we mean by my lot?
My eventual destination or situation.
Okay. So that it has to do with, your
My eternal.
Yeah, my eternal destination or my eternal lot. That's, you can say, this is my lot in life, right? That's one of the phrases that we use from time to time. So this is my lot in life. In other words, this is what's come to me. And so when it says that you hold up my lot, we're saying that the Lord is taking care of me. The Lord is my chosen portion. I think it's interesting to note that the writer here is saying, the Lord is my chosen portion. So I have chosen the Lord.
I put myself in God's hands.
Yes, put yourself in God's hands. And because of that, he will hold me up and take care of me. So alludes to the fact, as Mickey says here, that God is taking care of him through every circumstances. We see the hope and the promise when we talk about chosen portion and holding my lot. It does certainly indicate that the person that is writing here, David, is expressing hope, that he is showing that there is some promise here, because when God holds your lot, in other words, takes care of you, there's a promise there. notice it says, the Lord is my chosen portion and my cup. We have a portion and a cup. It's like, this is my meal, as it were. So my portion is the mess of meat that I'm getting, and the cup is the cup that I'm drinking. So there's nothing really to be taken there out of that I can see. But it means that I've completely chosen the Lord. I've taken everything that there is. And he takes care of me. But I think it's notable, as is mentioned, as mentioned here, that God will provide for us and keep us secure when we're with him. So, once again, given that the Lord is my chosen portion and my cup, I've chosen him. If I choose to no longer choose him, then he won't be the one that keeps us secure, because, or provide for us, because we're no longer with him. So it's important for us to understand that this has to do with a relationship of God that we have to keep together all the time. And it's necessary for us to do that. Mickey has spoken of this a number of times. In other words, about the why do bad things happen to good people? And the thing is that just because we're children of God, or just because we're not children of God, doesn't mean that anything in particular is going to happen to us just because of that. There are, as he mentions, you jump off the roof, you're going to end up with, at best, a sprained ankle. There are laws of physics, there's just laws of society and things like that we have to understand. And we need to understand that just because something bad might happen to us doesn't mean that God is not holding up my lot. As long as I continue to be as long as I continue to have chosen God, then he will continue to hold up my lot. I think what's important for us to understand is that we're talking here in a spiritual sense. And that's really what it's difficult many times for us, certainly is for me, to gather and hold on to, that there's a spiritual nature that we need to be talking about here, or understanding. Randy?
Just, there's a marginal reference in my Bible next to the word lot that says it's the same word that's used in Psalm 125, verse 3, which we've already studied, 125.
Psalm 125, verse 3.
But 125 verse 3 says, "For the scepter of wickedness shall not rest upon the land of the righteous." The word land says literally lot. So it's supposed to say the scepter of wickedness shall not rest upon the lot of the righteous. So that the righteous will not put forth their hands to do wrong.
Okay.
So
yeah.
And really the same message.
Yes.
In this psalm is the one.
Right. And this is, yeah. Oh, that's one of those, as the title here says, it's one of those songs of ascents. In other words, one of those that they would sing.
But this is like, it's like the other side of the same coin. In 16 it says, "The Lord will support my lot." And this one says, "The scepter of wickedness will not rest upon the lot of the righteous."
The scepter of wickedness, yeah, that's right. We have a comparison here then between the 16:5 and 125:3. And I think he makes an emphasis too in 125 verse 3, the second portion there, when it says, "For the scepter of wickedness shall not rest upon the lot of the righteous, that the righteous put not forth their hands unto iniquity." And so we have something like that in this psalm also, talking about those people that go after iniquity and what their lot in life is. We need to understand, though, given all this, that God won't ever forsake us. And so that in Hebrews, the 13th chapter and verse 5, says, keep your life free from love of money and be content with what you have, for he has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. Once again, I'm using the English Standard Version. So, I will never leave you nor forsake you. Now, once again, that's not an absolute, is it? Don't we have some conditional things that are here in this psalm? And also in 125, you might say. God doesn't say, I will never leave you nor forsake you if you forsake him. Once again, we have to understand that the Lord is my chosen portion and my cup. It is, I must choose him. If I decide to unchoose him, then we're going to have problems with that. The Lord will forsake us. He will leave us unless we are choosing his portion and his cup. All right, any other further comments on this particular one? And then we move on to verse 6. It says, "The lines have fallen for me in pleasant places. Indeed, I have a beautiful inheritance." Now, let's jump back to the previous one again. Notice it says, "The Lord is my chosen portion." And we come back to this slide. And "the lines have fallen for me in pleasant places. Indeed, I have a beautiful inheritance." What does he mean by the lines? What lines? Why would we have some lines? What difference does lines make?
It sounds to me like property lines.
Okay. Yeah, Roy, did you have a comment?
Where I'm at, if I'm on, the choice has been made. Right, you have to say that's the line we're in, is the choice has been made.
Sure. Yeah. We can.
It's our choice. If we're going to be in his grace or not.
Yes, it is our choice. That's correct. Yeah. Good. Yes, and I think also what Jenny says is correct here, because we can look at here that I have a beautiful inheritance. We're talking about the property lines, as it were, of when we think about when the promised land was divided up amongst the tribes. We understand that lines were drawn, and this was given to this tribe and this was given to that tribe, and so they received there, because of those lines, their beautiful inheritance. And that, I think, is what we've got here. So it goes along with verse 5, talking about choosing my portion. The portion that I have is the line that's been drawn by God for me. And it's a pleasant place. And I have a beautiful inheritance. But once again, we're looking at eternity. We're looking at a spiritual application here. I don't think even if we apply this to David, if we were to apply this to David just exclusively, there's no reason for us to think that David is now content because he gets to live in Judah. You know, that's not what we're talking about here. It's the fact that God has given me a pleasant place because of my relationship with him and because that I have chosen that relationship to be what he wants me to do. Mickey mentions here that David is content with what God has given and greatly accepts these things. I think that we can say that this applies not only to David, but it applies to the Messiah. It also applies to us when we look at that. We gratefully accept the things that God has given to us if we continue to stay with him, if we continue to choose the Lord as our portion. He says that earthly Israel received a pleasant land, a heritage most beautiful on earth. We look at Deuteronomy, the 8th chapter, in verses 7 through 9. It talks about the inheritance that Israel has gotten, where it says, "For the Lord your God is bringing you into a good land, a land of brooks of water, of fountains and springs flowing out of the valleys and hills, a land of wheat and barley, of vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of olive trees and honey, a land which you will eat, in which you will eat bread without scarcity, in which you will lack nothing, a land whose stones are iron and out of whose hills you can dig copper." So if we look at this from the purely physical sense, we can see that indeed the children of Israel did receive something that was better than what they had had before, even though they whined about it a lot in the 40 years of their wilderness wandering. God led them out of Egypt and led them into the promised land, and they would have gone into the promised land a whole lot earlier than they did if they had just trusted in God, a land, as it were, that they were promised, a land flowing with milk and honey. But they didn't do that. But there was a lot of promise there. We understand that what they got was certainly better than what they had in Egypt, even though they had complained about leaving what they had in Egypt. Once again, this is just as comparisons. In Jeremiah, the third chapter in verse 19, that's what talks about the pleasant land, where he says, "I said, how I would set you among my sons and give you a pleasant land, a heritage most beautiful of all nations. And I thought you would call me my father and would not turn from following me." It's interesting to note, if you look at this text in Jeremiah, the third chapter, that right before that, it's talking about why they were taken away into captivity and calls them a bunch of bad people. That's a paraphrase. So, if you were to look at Jeremiah 3:18, you would see that indeed that this is that God is telling them, this is what I would have given you if you'd have been people that followed after me. But once again, we go back to verse 5 that's talking about the fact that we need to choose God and make sure that we stay with him. Then he'll bless us. And as Mickey's got down here, Israel despised the pleasant land of their inheritance. The one in Psalms 106:24, then they despise the pleasant land, having no faith in his promise. And so when we look at this one in Psalms, we understand how can we show from the history of Israel that you might say they despised the pleasant land, having no faith in his promise, Randy?
It's also in Psalm 78, which sort of answers your question too. Psalm 78, beginning verse 54. Says, "So he brought them to his holy land, to his hill country, which his right hand had gained. He also drove out the nations before them, and apportioned them for an inheritance by measurement, and made the tribes of Israel dwell in their tents. Yet they tempted and rebelled against the Most High God, and did not keep his testimonies, but turned back and acted treacherously like their fathers. He turned aside like a treacherous bow." And it continues on.
Yeah.
That's a long narrative in Psalm 78. But it's the same idea. He gave them a beautiful place, and they rebelled against him anyway.
Yes, right. Yeah, rebelled against him anyway. I note in the American Standard Version that the title of Psalm 78 is God's Guidance of His People in Spite of Their Unfaithfulness. Randy?
The despising is not necessarily viewing it with contempt.
Okay.
Esau despised his birthright. Doesn't mean that he viewed it with contempt. He just put it a lot lower on his priorities than it really should be.
Right.
And similarly, the Israelites who came out of Egypt were not able to appreciate what God was really giving to them. He was telling them, you don't have to dig wells. The wells are already dug. You don't have to build cities. The cities are already built. I'm going to give you all of this. The farms are already established. And he's saying, you don't have to do anything along the lines of creating all of this nation. And they said, well, it's not worth it.
Yes, that's right. Not worth it to them. It didn't take them long, that's for sure. I mean, and perhaps we get that way in the fact that we have not only that which we need, we have mostly everything that we desire, at least here in this country for sure. And so we have a tendency, I think, to, as it were, using these words, despise the blessings that God has given us because we don't hold them to the high elevation that we ought to. As you say, we don't set our priorities to the right places here. And we have a tendency to just think that, well, this is just the way things are, you know, just happened this way. Well, God has given you these things, and we need to remember that. And they, therefore, despised the pleasant land because they didn't love what God had done for them. I don't know that any of them were, I don't recall, wishing that they could go back to Egypt. Though there were a couple of times that they said, let's go, because when they were under attack and things like that. Noah?
Is it speculation to say that David referred to Saul removing him out of his inheritance and David referred to the Lord giving his ultimate inheritance and Saul was chasing him and he was happy that he had the Lord with him and he wasn't afraid? Is there scripture back then?
Oh, that when David was being chased by Saul, that
this 16 is talking about that.
I'm not sure where you are on that.
Well, I'm just reading up on the story of Psalm 16. And since Saul was trying to kill David, David ran in the woods. I don't know how solid this is, but
I'm not sure that I would be comfortable with any connection between the problems that David had with Saul relating to Psalm 16.
Saint Saul was telling him to worship other gods. I don't know where all this is in the scripture.
Yeah, no, I'm not finding that. I'm certainly not finding it here in Psalm 16. No, I don't. It appears to me here what we're talking about when David is talking about this. He's simply talking about what, or as the title of the American Standard says, Jehovah the Psalmist, portion in life and deliverer in death. And whereas that's true regarding perhaps David's conflict with Saul, we have no reason to think that this occurred during the time of his conflict with Saul. It's just a matter of David saying that I trust in God. And because I trust in him and follow his commandments, then he will hold me up and take care of me. And as it says, will not forsake me. So as far as despising the pleasant land, yes, I think as Randy Bowles points out, it's not a matter of just outright rejection or outright, having a bad attitude. It's a
despising or contempt?
Contempt, yeah. And not that they had contempt for the land. It's just that they didn't accept this as something that God had given them, and they're not setting it in the priority place that it ought to have. Numbers 14th chapter in verses 1 through 10 shows what I was mentioning about their wandering in the wilderness. Jenny, do you have the inclination to read those 10 verses in Numbers?
Then all the congregation raised a loud cry, and the people wept that night. And all the people of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The whole congregation said to them, "Would that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would that we had died in this wilderness. Why is the Lord bringing us into this land to fall by the sword? Our wives and our little ones will become a prey. Would it not be better for us to go back to Egypt?" And they said to one another, "Let us choose a leader and go back to Egypt." Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the people of Israel. And Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, who were among those who had spied out the land, tore their clothes and said to the congregation of the people of Israel, "The land which we passed through to spy it out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord delights in us, he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land that flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, and do not fear the people of the land, for they are bread for us. Their protection is removed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them." Then all the congregation said to stone them with stones. But the glory of the Lord appeared at the tent of meeting to all the people of Israel.
It's interesting that these two, Caleb and Joshua, stood up and said, "We can do this because God is with us." And they said, "Let's stone them." Oh, so they despised the good land, did they not, in this instance? They had a promise before them that they could have taken just like that. But they said, we're just grasshoppers in the sight of these people. There's nothing we can do. Let's just go back to Egypt. And it's just amazing. And when Joshua and Caleb tried to tell them the right way, as it were, they said, "Well, let's stone them, then we don't have to worry about these people." Randy?
What's amazing, as you said, is that they had seen the power of God. The plagues, the army of the Egyptians that had come after them. And he demonstrated his power all the time. And they still said, "We're not impressed."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's really what sort of sums it up. We're not impressed. That's just unfortunate, as it were, for them, because it led them to, you know, a lot of exercise for 40 years, wandering through the wilderness. It's just amazing. They could have had everything that God promised them, and they gave it up because they despised the pleasant land. But if we go back to what we're talking about at the thing here, in verse 6, "The lines have fallen for me in pleasant places. Indeed, I have a beautiful inheritance." Had the people of Israel took this attitude when they were in the wilderness, they would have been in the pleasant place a whole lot quicker, and they would have had a beautiful inheritance. But of course, once again, we need to emphasize the fact that this is a spiritual thing that we're talking about. And so when we look at this entire psalm, we understand that what it's talking about is something that we need to take within us in our hearts. And not look that God is giving me a big house and a nice car and something like that. He's saying, "I'm promising you a beautiful inheritance. But our inheritance is not here on this earth." So we are children of God if we follow after God. And so, of course, obviously, the entire Bible points that out. And our inheritance is not a physical inheritance here on this earth. Does that help at all? So when they despise the pleasant land, that's just the opposite of what Psalms, the 16th chapter and verse 6, is talking about. We need to look forward to that. And it says that the lines have fallen for me in pleasant places. So that line, that dividing line for, you know, as it were, entering into heaven, is there for me to take and to enter then into the beautiful inheritance. as mentioned in the last point here, we always have to receive what God has given us with thanksgiving.
I know that is true for our physical blessings, but as you pointed out, this has spiritual implications as well.
Yes, indeed.
It's true that what God gives us from physical blessings, but it's also true with respect to the salvation we're expecting to receive. God, there are some people who will look at the idea of going to heaven. They want to anticipate that they're going to be playing harp. Where they get that, I don't know. And they revolt at that. Then someone points out to them, well, look, you're probably going to be spending all of your time praising God. And they don't care for that either. And we don't know what heaven is going to be like.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is, number one, God's telling us heaven's going to be fantastic. You won't be able to believe right now how wonderful it's going to be. Furthermore, hell is going to be on the 180 degrees out. And you won't be able to believe how bad it's going to be. But either way, if you find yourself in heaven, you will certainly want to be praising God forever because of the salvation He's given you.
Yes, I should think so. Yeah.
And if you're going to tell yourself, you're going to make me declare, you know, I just can't handle that in the way of heaven, then you just judged yourself worthy of going to hell.
Right. And I think we can, you know, Mickey's pointed out several times, you know, the people that will say, well, I'll just take my chances in the thing. And the fact is that it's like he said, you won't be in hell 5 minutes before you'd give 1,000 lifetimes to be back where you were before. You know, we see that with the rich man and Lazarus, that it didn't work out well for him. And we need to understand that that's an eternal thing. And that's what this psalm is talking about. It's talking about our eternal inheritance. And so when it says that it's a beautiful inheritance, we need to understand that what we're talking about is our inheritance in heaven. We're not talking about anything here on this earth. And whether this is about David or about the Messiah or about us, it's all the same thing. We're all talking about this beautiful inheritance. So if you look at David is understanding eternity here also. I think we've discussed that previously in this psalm, that David understands the concept of eternity. And if we look at the Messiah, we understand that the Messiah at this time would understand that he would need to come to earth and that he would need to sacrifice himself and then go back to this beautiful inheritance. And then we need to understand also that we can obtain this beautiful inheritance also. But we need to not get caught up in physical matters here, but understand that we're talking about spiritual things. When we look at these, and that we have pleasant places, a beautiful inheritance, but we always have to be thankful for that. And the scripture there in Luke, the 12th chapter, and verses 13 through 21. Randy, are you there yet? Luke 12, 13 to 21. Would you read that when you have a chance?
Luke 12, 13 through 21.
So this is where Jesus is talking to a crowd of folks, and all of a sudden, this guy breaks in.
Someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me." But he said to him, "Man, who appointed me judge or arbitrator over you?"
Then he said to them, "Beware and be on your guard against every form of greed, for not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of his possessions." And he told them a parable, saying, "The land of a rich man was very productive. And he began reasoning to himself, saying, 'What shall I do, since I have no place to store my crops?' Then he said, 'This is what I will do. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, "Soul, you have many goods laid up for many years to come. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry." But God said to him, "You fool, this very night your soul is required of you, and now who will own what you have prepared? So is the man who stores up treasure for himself, is not rich toward God."
All right, not rich toward God sort of sums the things up here. Once again, a person that despises his inheritance. And God has given him these things. And he says, "Well, it's me." It's kind of like the kings of both, I think, Assyria and Babylon said, "Well, look what I've done." You know, and not realized, perhaps they should have realized, that they were simply servants of God doing the things that God had them to do. But they felt it was by their own power and might that they had taken over Israel and Judah. And here we see that this man has, as he says, ample goods laid up for many years. English Standard Version says, "Relax, eat, drink, and be merry." The man fails to be thankful to God for what he has gotten. And how often do we do that? We say, "Look at all the things that I've got. Look at everything that I've got." And if we look at it and say, "It's all me," then we're missing the point. We've despised, once again, despised our inheritance. In this instance, as it says, despised the pleasant land. So the pleasant land is laid up there for us to be looking forward to and going to, but we need to stay with it and not despise the pleasant land. And then, so just the opposite then of Luke the 12th chapter is 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 6, where Paul says, "Now there is great gain in godliness with contentment." Great gain in godliness with contentment. We need, once again, Mickey's asked numerous times, what does godliness mean, right? And so it's just a compound word that means God-likeness. And so we are doing our best to be like God. So we have to be like God as much as we can, because he's given us an example in this book that he's written for us of how we're supposed to be and how we're supposed to behave. And we need to do that with contentment. So we look once again back at the people and what they said to Moses and Aaron when they were whining about the spies that came out of the land, but Joshua and Caleb were saying, "We can do this," and the other ones were saying, "No, we can't do this," and they were despising what God had offered them. And we need to understand that we need to be content with, as it says, our lot in life, as we've used that phrase a couple of times this morning. Randy.
In a similar passage, what Jesus talked about in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 6.
Matthew 6.
Beginning in verse 19. "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. But where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." And of course, I mean, I could read the whole chapter, but...
Yeah, you could, that's right.
But wrapping up that chapter in verse 33, "But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. So do not worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow will care for itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own."
Doesn't that sum up Psalm 16? Or what? Yeah, get the right one. Psalm 16. You know, that's very true. "Seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added to you." That's exactly what the psalmist is telling us here, to a very large extent.
Same author.
That's true. That's right. Same person wrote the whole thing. So, yeah, good point. I'm glad you brought that one up. But yeah, there's so much in Matthew chapter 6 that really applies to this about our treasures, whether they're on this earth or they're in heaven. And once again, that's the proper word conundrum that many of us are in. It's like, this is all I know. This is physical, and this is all I know. And it's very difficult to focus on the spiritual and say, this is what I need to be concerned about. It's difficult. I mean, I think all of us have this battle on a daily basis, trying to divorce the physical from the spiritual and accept the spiritual in such a way that we realize that God has given us everything that we need and has provided for us this beautiful inheritance. There's great gain in godliness with contentment. Yeah, Randy.
I think there's wisdom to be found in Acts 17 when Paul was speaking to the Athenians, and they had never heard of this God.
No,
they had created an altar to the unknown God, which is obviously that one, because they didn't know it.
In verse 23, that's right.
Yeah, but when he says in verse 24, the God who made the world and all things in it, since he is Lord of heaven and earth, does not dwell in temples made with hands, nor is he served by human hands as though he needed anything, since he himself gives to all people life and breath and all things. And he made from one man every nation of mankind to live on the face of the earth, having determined their appointed times and the boundaries of their habitation, that they would seek God, if perhaps they might grope for him and find him, though he is not far from each one of us. What this tells us is that every man and woman who lives on the face of the earth is expected to seek after God.
Expected to seek.
That's what God expects you to do.
Right.
You're expected, if you're born and breathing air, you're expected to seek God. And he's revealed himself in the creation. And he's revealed his person and his will in his word.
Okay. Right.
So we have evidence surrounding us in every way, shape, and form. And his word is the most published book in the world.
Yeah.
It's the most published app you can get on your phone. I mean, there's no excuse that anybody has for not knowing God.
Well, I believe, and in chapter 17 there, I think it kind of summed up by the very next verse, the first part of it. For in him we live and move and have our being. And that's it. That's Psalm 16 to a T right there, I think, also. And once again, like you say, the same person wrote it all anyway. So it's all unified. Okay, according to my little counter here, we actually got through 3 content slides. So that's better than we did on whatever the other day was, Wednesday. And so Mickey will take up perhaps with this next time or somewhere else. So give it a try. Thank you.